financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
How many panic calls have you been getting recently?
I tell you, well, not too many panic calls.
That surprises me.
Well, I tend to have people in safer things usually, right? But a little bit more conservative or balanced. But I did get a message from one or two people even asking me if their money was safe in the bank. So
what I'm
seeing is that people are paying attention to the news and the market right now. The last 3 days, you know, I should say that we pre-record this show. This is a Tuesday, April 8th, when we're recording this show. So if you see any ticker symbols or anything at the bottom, it's from April 8th. And before we did the show, probably. So what I will say is that people who never watch the markets, who don't pay that much attention to the news, are thrown into the mix right now because they're worried about their 401ks. The average person, right, is who I'm talking to, worried about their 401ks. So what's very difficult about that is they often don't have a real frame of reference, some familiarity with how to interpret what's going on in the market. And so they panic more easily, but they act more slowly. They don't know what to do.
Okay.
That's an uncomfortable position for people. Now, as you know, I try not to be political on this show. I don't think my politics have anything to do with somebody else's decision. But I don't think I'm alone in saying that the market requires competency and consistency. And if it gets those two things, that equals confidence. So I will call those the three C's. Competency and consistency equal confidence. When the market doesn't have those things, it gets the fourth C, chaos.
And that seems exactly where we are. I'm hearing a lot of terms thrown around like that I've learned from this show, like bear market and recession and things we've kind of hit on a little bit before. But yeah, I think everybody probably really needs to hear this stuff right now.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, we hit a bear market in 3 days. We hit bear market territory. We haven't done that since 1987, and we did it in 3 days.
Wow.
I'm not saying that like it's a great accomplishment. Okay.
I'm sorry
to be laughing at all, because it is not funny to be in this position. But you have to understand that what's happening to most people right now is what we call whipsaw, right? Panic, oh my gosh, look at my 401k going down, or I'm afraid to open the envelope. Followed by, hey, wait, we're getting some gains. Let's be clear that what we've got at the time we're recording this show are not gains. They are losses we're starting to get back some of.
But I feel like the people that I've talked to, the people that are in their 50s and 60s are the ones that are really worried versus 20s, you know, you'll make it back as we talk about. But if you're getting ready to retire and then you look at your statement and it's just demolished, it's hard to not panic.
Yes, I heard a statement from the president, actually, that said people looking to retire right now aren't worried about the day-to-day fluctuation.
I'm paraphrasing. I saw that as well. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Tell that
to
somebody.
Not the people I'm talking to. Yeah, not the people I'm talking to.
No, I mean, just think about it. Would you be worried about the day-to-day fluctuation if you're knocking on retirement's door? Yeah, you would. Because if you cash out of those accounts when you have those losses, they are no longer paper losses. They are now real losses, and you need that money. You've relied on that money to retire, which is another reason why we talk about, as you're getting closer to retirement, you need to start moving money into more conservative areas. You know, bonds, you know, if you're working with a broker, I use a lot of fixed indexed annuities to accomplish that. Sometimes people go to high yield savings accounts, things like that.
Can I take a quiz here? That means divestment is what I've learned from you.
Diversity. Yeah, and
diversity,
divestment, right.
divesting. Yes.
Yes, if you're unwinding your investment portfolio, you might call it divesting. Exactly, right. So where things get really sticky right now is that we don't have any consistency. One day it's, I'm going to slap these tariffs on. The next day it's, I might negotiate, right? But maybe I'll do 50% on China, who will have no real choice if they're going to protect their economy, but to retaliate. And then we say, but don't retaliate.
And they've come back strongly and said they're doing this. So
Boy.
it day to day, it's actually not day to day, it's minute to minute. So you're right, it's hard to act in that kind of an environment.
Lest I remind people that China, if they ever call our notes, we are in trouble. Okay. So America has had a history of setting the financial pace for the world. When we start to withdraw from a world market, as the rhetoric has been lately, that creates more of what you see in the world markets. It isn't just that the US economy tanked over a three-day period. Hong Kong had the worst drop that they've had. They dropped 13%. They haven't done that in decades. Let me just go back for a moment because we did a show about tariffs. Little did I know that they were going to be levied in a day or two after I said that, but we did the show about tariffs. And the point I was trying to make is that tariffs are a tax that we pay on products. The idea is we're going to slap a tariff on these countries and they will fall to their knees because they're going to have to pay so much money. It's not quite how that works, right? Who's going, okay. You slap a 50% tariff on China. How much are you going to pay for your next computer if it's made in China or if all the parts are made in China? It isn't China paying it, it's us paying it, right? It's the consumer that has to tolerate that. So that brings me to my main concern here, which is who gets hurt? Who gets hurt by this are the working class.
I was just looking today, and you probably know all about this, and if I'm getting it wrong, please tell me. But I was seeing too that there's a loophole now also being closed where if you're buying stuff, it used to be under $800, you could get it without all these tariffs and taxes on it. Now they're closing that. So if you're ordering, just say Shein or Temu or any of those places, probably have the names, the Temu pronunciation wrong, but it could be up to $50 an item. They're adding all these taxes on. So where you could still order under 800, you can't anymore.
I think you have it right. And I think even the pronunciation of Temu was right. It brings up an important point. The working class will get hurt, right? The average family of four can expect to pay about $3,800 more a year. That's if we're not buying a car. I mean, we talked about that, right? How much a car is going up. But just your average, day-to-day groceries, whatever you're going to do for your regular living expenses, because of the tariffs that are coming in. The average family of four is estimated to have an increased expense of about $3,800 a year. Now, who gets hurt really hard? The people who can least afford it. The low-income families. Those are the families that shop more on Temu, that shop more in, they buy more imports, right? They're looking for a deal and they don't have the cash to say, I don't care. I'm not shopping there. I'm going to shop at my mom and pop store down the street. They have to really watch their pennies. And that sometimes means, most often means, that lower income families buy more imported goods.
We'd all love to support local and like your local bookstore or whatever else, but in reality, we get a lot of products from the Walmarts and the Targets and the things that, I mean, that's just how you make it week to week or month to month
That's
for a
right.
lot of families.
Even people who don't think they're buying imports are buying imported goods. We don't make a lot of things here. One of the politicians who will remain nameless at the moment came out and said, millions of jobs are going to flock to the United States to put those little tiny screws in iPhones. Okay, it's not going to happen. We don't work for $2 an hour. And if we have to pay Americans to do those jobs, we can't afford the product in the end. So to go back to lower income families for a moment, if a family of four middle income is going to pay about $3,800 more a year, if these tariffs stay on for a year, another thing we don't know, then lower income families will see 2 to 2.5 times that burden. That means their purchasing power was just reduced. It was just cut by that amount. So this will hit lower income families especially hard.
It feels also like it's a double whammy. You're also then combining it with the federal cuts to like food programs and other resources that you might have availed yourself to before. So now not only do you not have those, you also have 3,800 more.
I don't think there's any way to see it differently. I know that people will say, well, it's short-term gain for long-term, short-term pain for long-term gain.
Right.
I don't know. When you're ticking off the world economy like this, even if you get your way temporarily, and maybe in the end I'll be wrong about this, right? How long do you think that's going to last when you've angered everybody? I remember when we were talking about tariffs, I said to you, I don't think we should tick off Canada and Mexico, right? Just on car prices alone. But I know that there are people who believe, and everybody, that's what America is supposed to be, is that everybody is welcome to their opinion, right? I know that there are people who will see it as he's just negotiating a deal. He's going to press hard and they're going to bend to his will and we're going to be better because of it. That remains to be seen. But right now, I'm looking at a lot of people very worried about their 401ks, asking, what are we going to do to move to safety and things of that nature. And I think you're right. The cutbacks and the let's not forget the job losses, enter DOGE, right? We're hurting our economy. And the sad part about this is when it happened because of COVID, we had to scramble and deal with it, right? Politicians were spending their 24 hours a day trying to figure out how to save us from this. Right now, we have a self-inflicted problem.
It's also interesting too, because obviously I cover the news and I'm reading a lot about it, but there are a lot of financial people in the financial world that are backers, Republican backers, that are breaking from this and saying, I'm looking at this and I'm not really seeing any way it's not bad. So that's interesting to me too. That I think makes people a little bit more nervous too.
Well, that's why I said, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see any other way to see this. I mean, you're saying it back to me, and we did not talk about this before the show. What are these families going to do who are experiencing cuts, job losses, increased expenses, and complete uncertainty about whatever savings they may have? This is not a comfortable place for people to be as an investor. You can't make decisions based on this stuff.
So I'm hoping that you have some tips maybe to
I do.
kind of calm the waters right now. We'll get to those in the second half, but in the meantime, I do want to get your phone number.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. We're talking about kind of a difficult topic today, but one that's on everybody's minds that I'm talking to.
There's no way I couldn't talk about it today. Now, by the time people see this show, you need to remember that we filmed it on April 8th, and my guess is there will be something very different, whatever that might be. And
Something new, yeah.
that's the point, is we cannot, as advisors, right? People are not making the same decisions. They're not making the decisions the same way that we're trained to make them, which is pay attention to whether you're going into a bear market or into a bull market. And, are your clients close to retirement? Are they not? How is their portfolio diversified? What sectors seem to be doing well in the market? We don't have any clue right now. I mean, I'm going to say that I do have some tips for people about some things you can do that may be useful, of course, right? But I think every advisor I know is just saying, I'm just glued to the television and I'm exhausted watching it because I can't find a direction. We were in a bear market for like a minute. We like bingo, bear market. Worst 3 days since 1987. We haven't been there, right? And then the next day, oh, look, here's the market coming back. Why? Now, here's my really personal theory about why this might be happening. And believe me, I am going way out on a limb here because I haven't heard anybody else say this. But, the one thing that I can hold true to all the time is that the market likes certainty. You've heard me say it when an election is coming up or when there's a crisis. As soon as the market has some certainty, it likes it. Now, what you're seeing today with some gains coming back is that there's been a little pullback from the Trump administration to say, well, instead of just saying, we're not going to talk, here's your tariffs, here's your pill, swallow it. Now they're starting to say, well, you know, we might talk about this, we might negotiate about this. And when people are saying, are these permanent or temporary tariffs, we get the double talk, you know, the double speak of, well, they could be temporary or they could be permanent. I mean, President Trump may be trying to keep, you know, everybody in a foreign country on edge, but while he's doing that, he's keeping us on edge as well. So my personal theory, as I was getting to, about why the market might be tolerating this better than we expected it to. Boy, I'm careful about that. For the moment, is that in some crazy way, the sort of uncertainty has become more normal. So, in some way, we're becoming desensitized to the uncertainty. It's not such a surprise when the Trump administration flips on a dime and says, well, now we're going to do this. Or we're going to go from, I'm going to double down to, no way I'll negotiate in 24 hours. I do hear people speaking angrily about, you know, Nero fiddled while Rome burned, right? Playing golf and doing those kinds of things while the market is tanking. And just, you know, I'm having parties with billionaires. And I had to wonder, what are the conversations with the billionaires? Are they shorting the market? You know, I don't know. So that stuff is hard, and it is difficult to not feel political about it, even though you know, I am sensitive to both sides of this. The side of harming the American public, I don't see where that has a place in politics. You're supposed to be working for us, right? That's what government does. And in the end, you know, if this turns out to be a great thing, I'll swallow my pride and say, boy, I was wrong. But
I was
right
going to say
now,
this is, yeah,
working
this
for
is one of
people.
those times where you'd be happy to be wrong. But
I
talking
would.
about not being on either side, it's not just Democrats or Republicans that are losing money. It's everyone. It's going to be more
That's right.
expensive for everyone. So for me, just like you, it's not about whether you agree or don't agree with the majority of the administration. It's like it's hurting everyone, and it's hard to see, like you were talking about in the first half, a little bit of pain now. Okay, well, how long's that pain going to last? And especially if you're near retirement age, can you afford to hang in there for however long?
Well, that's a very interesting question because there are estimates floated already by people who do this for a living, right? Analyze p politics for a living and analyze the economy. And it seems to be about a year. People seem to say that the American public will tolerate at least the, I shouldn't say the American public. The stat I've heard is that the backers, Trump's backers, his base, will tolerate this for about a year. A year is way longer than I would like to see anybody have to tolerate this. There will be people who will be flat broke, homeless, hungry in a year. I mean, in way less than a year. People don't, most people today don't have more than a week or two in savings. You know, if they have a few months, they consider themselves lucky. And sometimes that savings is in their 401ks, and they're thinking, well, I can borrow against my 401k if I need to. And they're watching it go down. So, yeah, so I did say that I would have some things that you can do, but I just want to say that the quote about don't be a panickin, right? A coined word, panickin. The markets move rapidly on something we call fear index. So I'm not surprised that the president would come out and say, don't panic, right? Because the markets were already moving drastically. Over the weekend, I was not looking forward to waking up Monday morning and looking at what the world markets were doing before ours opened. But you have to remember that that fear index can be very dangerous. And the place it can be, one of the places it can be the most dangerous is for the people we're talking about in the beginning of the show, which is the people that, which are the people that don't have their finger on the pulse of the market. They're maybe not large investors. They probably have some CDs, some savings accounts, you know, a checking account, maybe they've got a mutual fund or two, and they're wondering, should I pull my money out of the bank because there's a threat that FDIC will be dismantled. And so I want to say you want to be very, very careful about that. If you ever saw It's a Wonderful Life, you know what a run on a bank is, all right? You don't want to create a run on the banks because you're afraid, all right? What you want to do is pay attention to what's happening. Even if the FDIC was dismantled and privately held, that doesn't mean that your money would not be safe. It might. I don't want to see the FDIC dismantled, believe me. But just pay attention to what is real, not what your gut tells you, and really do lean into the news like this. And you know, if you only look at it when you're worried, it's kind of like making a budget when you have no job, right? You have to kind of learn about the stuff as time goes on. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about before I give you some real solutions here is, and it's the comment that, well, only 50% of Americans have money in the stock market, so we don't really care. Well, first of all, 50% of Americans, a
It's
lot
a
of
lot of people.
Americans. I mean, holy cow, if that were accurate, but I'm going to say it's way higher than that because anybody with a 401k, unless they're completely in the fixed account, which is almost nobody, has stocks. They have mutual funds. Mutual funds are made up of stocks. Okay, they have money in the market. So, you know, if you own a mutual fund or you own some bonds or you own some stocks directly, you've got money in the market. Now, I told you that I would say a few things that people could think of. And again, because this is changing all the time, you know, I don't know. But what I'm thinking is, first of all, money in the bank is probably safer than money in the market right now. Will you give up some gains? You might. If the market bounces back and you have gains, that's your trade-off, right? If you, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not giving anybody advice here. This is an educational show about that, right? So that you can ask your advisor these things. Would I be better off if I moved some of my money into safety? And you can do that within your 401k, usually online with a click of a button, slide some money over there, right? You need to be aware that if you're going to sell shares in your 401k, if you're going to move money, it's not going to happen till the close of business that day. So don't wake up in the morning and say, I don't like the way the market is and push the button without talking to your advisor. Okay. The second thing you can do is, you know, certainly you could do it in a bank. You could do some CDs. There are decent rates on CDs right now. Pretty short-term commitment. And you could also do high-yield savings accounts or money markets, all safer kinds of money, not really linked to the bank, to the market, right? They give you a fixed rate of interest. This is what you're going to earn for this period of time. And then the last thing I'm going to tell you that I like to see people do is to pick up some indexed annuity dollars, right? To put some money into indexed annuities, because there you have a sort of a blend. You have the safe money because they usually have a guaranteed floor, right? Your principal is guaranteed, plus, in some cases, a minimum interest rate guarantee. And you have earnings linked to the market. So you could have some money. This isn't for all of your money any more than anything is, but you could have some of your money in something like an indexed annuity, which would give you the safety you're seeking right now, backed by the strength of the insurance company and then the guarantee funds in whatever state you're in that you purchase it in. And then on top of that, if the market does rebound and goes up, you will get some of those market gains. Now, could you out earn it in your stocks or your mutual funds if you stayed there? Maybe. You could also out lose it.
I was going to say you could also tank it.
So especially when you're getting close to retirement, that might be a good, plus you could get a lifetime income, you know, at some point in the future from it that would be reliable. So
This might be a big question, but what happens if the FDIC was dismantled?
well, it's already been hit a bit. But what happens if it's completely dismantled? I think the idea is that it would be privatized. And so in some way, private agencies would then insure your money.
But if you already have money in the bank, would they kind of take over for the FDIC?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we don't have any history of this. That's the thinking. That's the thinking. But do you really want that? I mean, privatizing government is one thing. There are a lot of people who believe that privatizing government has its merit, right? But when it comes to a contract that you created with a bank when you put your money in there and said, I'm going to put my money here because It's FDIC insured, and maybe insured beyond that, SDIF, right? So I'm going to agree to put my money here because that's appealing to me. When you start to remove that sort of guarantee or even privatize it, you'll hurt the banks as well because people won't have a reason. If you're going to take on risk, you want it to be because you have a chance for higher earnings, right? So if you want safety and you're going to put your money in the bank and they take away the safety feature, what's the point?
I'm also hearing that some people are buying gold.
So people will always make decisions like that. Like, where is my money going to be safe? Am I going to buy gold? Well, what's the price of it? What do you think it will go to? I mean, that's like anything else. You can say it's a metal, and so it has an intrinsic value, and you would be right in thinking that, but you have to be able to sell it to someone who has money to buy it
True.
if you're going to convert it to food.
Oh, every morning when you get up to kind of take a look at what it's doing at that point. And I could imagine as an advisor, it's got to be hard what direction to point your clients in.
Well, yeah, I work as more of a consumer advocate than an advisor at this stage, right? So what I'm doing is bringing news to you and saying this is what's going on, teaching you to think about it a different way maybe, or to maybe hold up the mirror and say this is what I think you might want to consider, and then talk about what are your options. You don't have to do them with me, right? You can do them with your advisor or by yourself or whatever you want, but you should have a place, a safe place that you can go to where you can get information like this that is not necessarily selling you a product, right? I'm not, nothing about this show that is saying you have to buy these things, right? Might you buy something through us if you decide to work with us? Yeah, you might, but it's not the basis of the show, right? So I just, I think that people are really, I mean, we could go on forever about this, but people are really worried. I don't think it will, I don't think the market will settle down very much. I think it's been choppy and it's getting choppier as we move along, unless something happens, unless there's litigation that says you can't put tariffs on. There's seven, as of yesterday, I think there were seven Republicans that had signed on to that bill. The House would be tougher, but there's a bill about the president needs Congress before he can put tariffs on. If that passes, that could settle the market down a bit. Maybe, right? That's a little certainty. Then there's some certainty about something. But, what are people doing right now? They're sticking their head in the sand. They're doing things like Megabucks in the middle of all this has raised a ticket to $5. And I see these ads for Jackpocket where you can scratch tickets on your
Oh,
phone.
no. Yeah, that's
I'm
just what
getting
we need.
bombarded. Yeah, I'm getting bombarded with work from home, So just be cautious about your money. Don't lash out into some get rich quick scheme because you're worried and you say, well, I might as well do whatever. Get some professional help and make thoughtful, prudent decisions. And you can do it pretty easily, I think, if you reach out to advisors.
And what is your phone number if someone wants to reach out to ask you some questions about this or
Sure, they
anything,
can.
really?
Yes, they can reach us at 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm all right. How's your week going?
It's going busily, but yeah, no, it's great. Well, yeah, there's a lot going on everywhere in the market, in the workplace. There's plenty to talk about. But today we're going to talk about life insurance. And
Okay.
thank you for playing. No, not life insurance like all the boring details of life insurance. Life insurance from a consumer standpoint, and partly from an agent standpoint. Now, people have pointed out to me lately that they used to think of me like an insurance agent or an investment advisor, and now they think of me as a consumer advocate. So
Okay.
I feel like a consumer advocate, and I have been for many years. But something like this is a little tricky because, there are lots of people in my industry who work with life insurance. I write life insurance very occasionally. I don't write many policies, but I wanted to talk about what might be useful to people to protect themselves against some of the less scrupulous things that are out there.
Okay.
Did I just say that? I did.
You
Okay.
did. And there's all different kinds of life insurance policies, right? We've talked about
Oh my
this, that
gosh.
there's so many. Okay.
There's so many, but let's for our purposes today, let's just lump them under two categories: term life
Okay.
insurance and whole life insurance. Now, I know people get confused about that. So if you think about term life insurance, it's good for a term. It's good for a period of time and then it goes away. So it's good for a term of 15 years or 10 years or 20 or 30 years, right? And then it disappears.
Okay.
But it also has lower premiums. It is pure death benefit for a term, a period of time, right? Whole life comes in many different flavors and, whole life, universal life, variable universal life. I mean, there are blends out there. Anytime they can give a product a new name and give it new features, they do. But any form of whole life insurance under that huge umbrella, will cost you more than term, some not
Right.
very much, some a lot more, right, in premiums, but it will build some kind of cash value.
Okay.
Even a stripped down universal life policy, that is what I call built on a term chassis. In other words, it's the least expensive of the whole life policies you can buy, but it still is permanent insurance, like all whole life is. Even the stripped down basis of that will still build a tiny little bit of cash value just to stay alive. So the
Okay.
major two differences between term and whole life for our purposes today are cash value. A
Okay.
term policy doesn't ever build any cash value. You pay the money for a straight life benefit, and it will end whenever that term policy ends. Okay.
Is whole life, do you have to have a physical for that, or for both,
Excuse
or
me.
for some?
It depends on your age and the amount of
Okay.
coverage you're buying. But physicals are common. Sometimes it's just medical questions that you answer. You don't have to
Okay.
have a regular physical. Sometimes they'll do medical questions and a blood draw. So the underwriting, that's called underwriting. The underwriting details are on a case-by-case basis, depending on what the company who is selling you the insurance requires of someone of your age and your health
Okay.
parameters. Okay. So there are two major things I want to talk about today, given that brief but probably still confusing background. I want to talk to people who are considering selling their life insurance policy for some reason. And I want to talk to people who are considering buying a life insurance policy for the purposes of paying off debt.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now let me tell you. There are times that both of these might make sense. But in my experience, there are many more cases that I see where it didn't make sense. And that's why I'm here to talk about it today.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about people who sell their life insurance policy. Now, these are called life settlements, right? And they come in different forms of life settlement, but most often they're available to people who are 65 years and older and or who are in poor health. Now, the
Okay.
idea is that you take your life insurance policy that you no longer need and you sell it for an influx of cash.
Okay.
This could, in theory, be a good thing to do, but there are many reasons it's not. So let's talk about the pros of that first. The pros of selling your life insurance policy. Well, the obvious one is you get immediate cash, right? You're going to get money in the door. You're going to get a higher payout than the surrender value. In other words, if you're looking at your life insurance policy and you're saying, "Boy, I really need this money and I'm tired of paying these premiums. What am I going to do?" You might think, "Well, I'm going to surrender the policy. I'm going to cash it in and take the cash value." Right? And that would give you some money. Now, that might also, we'll talk about cons too, but that might also cause a taxable event for you, depending on how much you've paid into the policy. But let's say the surrender value is $5,000. You could choose to say, "I'm going to cash in my policy." That's a famous phrase, cash it in, right? And take my $5,000 and I'm going to walk away. And you will have paid all those premiums you paid over the years for no coverage anymore. You had coverage while you paid it, but then the policy is gone, okay? If you're going to sell that policy to someone, they're going to keep it in force, right? They're going to pick up the premiums and start paying them. Sadly, it sounds like, but there's no other way to say this, gambling on the date that you're going to die and they're going to collect. Whew, isn't this creepy, right?
Who can do that though? Your kids, you mean? Carry it on?
Well, the kids probably wouldn't buy your policy. They would probably just say, "Hey, mom, dad, I know you're having trouble paying those premiums. We'll pick up the premiums because we're going to be the beneficiaries." But other people, investors, believe it or not,
Oof.
and
That
you
sounds
see these
grim.
ads, it's grim. Yeah.
Yeah.
You see these ads on TV that say, "Sell your life insurance policy. You know that policy you don't need any longer." Well, it's true. If you have a life insurance policy that you no longer need, let's say you took it out and you were paying premiums on it when you had a bunch of debt and you were covering your spouse's income, et cetera, but now your spouse maybe has predeceased you, maybe you don't have any debt, and maybe your kids are all working jobs and buying houses and living fat and
They're doing
healthy, and
okay.
they don't need your money, yeah,
Yeah.
and they're okay with it. You could say, "Well, what am I paying these premiums for? I'm going to leave this money to charity, maybe." Maybe you want to do that, but maybe you don't. Maybe you just say, "I don't want to pay for this policy anymore." In that case, if you qualify, and that again, usually you're over 65, usually you may be in poor health, but if you qualify, then you could find an investor, or they will find you, unfortunately. They will find you and they'll say, "We're going to buy your policy with your $5,000 of cash value." Now, I'm totally making these numbers up, right? But we'll give you $8,000, $15,000, whatever they think it's worth to them based on your usually government expected lifespan. So what they're doing is they're making an investment. They're saying, "Don't cash your policy in, sell it to me instead. I'll pay you more than your cash value, but less than your death benefit. And you no longer will have that life insurance. I will own it. I will be the beneficiary on it." Okay. So when you die, I get all the money. Now, one of the reasons they do this is because life insurance proceeds are tax-free. So from an investor standpoint, or from your beneficiary standpoint, this is a very nice thing to get tax-free income. Where it gets fuzzy for me is the negotiation part. How does somebody who's a skilled investor negotiate with somebody who's looking at what they believe is a useless policy, wanting to get some money out of it? So that's where it worries me. That's where I'm hoping regulation will happen, will step in, will make things safe for the consumer, right? Because you're kind of out there on your own in these kinds of things. And I worry about people with that.
If you just do a settlement without the investor, is it kind of like a 401k where if you take money out early, you get penalized?
That's a very interesting question. Yes and no. Now, you don't get penalized. If you can either, if you want to call it a penalty, if you cash your policy in and you give up the death benefit and you take your money and walk, you're not penalized by that, other than the fact that you've paid premiums and now you no longer have death benefit. But you may have a taxable event if you paid in more than you're taking out, you won't have a taxable event. But let's say you paid in $3,000. I have to say I'm not an accountant, right? Let's say you paid $3,000 in and you took $5,000 out. That $2,000 may be considered a gain depending on the tax laws that year. And you might get a 1099 for that. However, the other way to take money out of your life insurance is to borrow against that cash value. Now, That can be a good way for people to do it when they need a short-term fix. Like, gosh, I have $5,000 in this policy and I need to do a car repair and I don't have the cash to do it and I don't want to put it on a credit card. Maybe I'll borrow against my life insurance policy for $3,000 and I'll either choose.
Bringing it back to the 401k for a minute, do you need qualifying events like you would there to borrow? Oh, you
No.
can borrow for any reason.
Yes, and you are
Okay.
borrowing your own death benefit. So this is where keeping a whole life policy could be a good benefit to you if this kind of scenario comes up. So you could borrow against the death benefit. Let's say you borrow $3,000 of your $5,000. Now, legally, that loan does not need to be paid back. You have borrowed against your own policy,
Okay.
but it will have an interest rate on it. So let's say the interest rate is 5%. Okay, or 4.25%. Every year you're going to get a bill for that interest. Now, if you just pay the interest, you'll keep that loan stable at $3,000. You need to understand that when you're borrowing against your life insurance policy, even though you're taking the cash value out, your death benefit will be reduced by that amount
Right.
if you don't pay it back. So that's okay. A lot of people will say, so what? I had a $50,000 policy. I borrowed $3,000 from it. If I die tomorrow, it pays $47,000. I don't care.
Right.
The thing you want to be careful of is paying that interest to keep it from growing and growing and growing. You don't want to
Right.
die and find out that your $3,000 loan became $20,000 over the course of
If
time.
you do decide to borrow, say you decide to borrow $5,000out of your life insurance policy, do you have to get approved for like a loan, like a bank loan, or you
No,
automatically like, hey, that's your money, you can take it?
it's your money,
Okay.
you can take it.
So you
Probably take
really
you
can
about
be
10
using
days.
this as like a short-term loan kind of thing.
You could be, yes. And
Okay.
so that's another reason why, and I'm not trying to advocate either one or the other side of this. Truly, I'm not. There are reasons that these options make sense for people. What my message is get some help or make sure that you know what the reasons are. I want to go through some cons about selling your life insurance policy before we get to the break. And one of them is, of course, you're going to get a lower payout than the death benefit. So if you bought your life insurance policy to cover your spouse or your kids, and you cash it, you sell it, not cash it in, you sell it for, a quarter of what it was worth. You need to be able to reckon with that, right? My recommendation would be talk to your family about it, make sure they're okay about it, because they might say, no, don't sell. Keep me on as a beneficiary. I'll pay the fees that you're having trouble paying, and I'll pick up the premiums. At least give your
An
Here's my
option.
pitch on this. At least give your family the same courtesy that you're giving a stranger who might want to buy your policy. Give them a first option to keep it, okay? There might be tax implications if you sell your policy. So again, maybe you've put, $15,000 into it and somebody comes along and wants to buy it for $20,000. That $5,000 might be a gain. And so you might end up holding less money than you thought you were going to. There are eligibility restrictions. So this is where I'm saying most of the time they want somebody who is either terminally ill, sad, but true. Which, by the way, while I'm saying this, if you are terminally ill and you're listening to this, check your insurance policy because you might have a feature you don't even know about on your death benefit that allows you to take two or three times the value of your death benefit while you're alive to pay for your health care. So don't give this up without checking first about what your benefits are. And obviously, you're going to lose that death benefit if you sell this policy. So that's the loss of the coverage is a major con. And then one last, well, I guess there's two last things. One is that these companies will require access to your medical records and your personal data. So there's a privacy issue there for me. If that's what you want to give up, that's up to you. And then the potential impact on any government plans. If you're on Medicaid or any other needs-based plan, and you get an influx of cash from selling your life insurance, it might affect your benefits. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just saying ask about it first.
Yeah, that's good to be aware of
Phew.
because you don't want to get like less of a check of something else. All right, we'll get into more of this coming up with part two of financial fitness. First, I'd like to get your number.
Thanks. Part two will be about what you do if you're thinking about buying a life insurance policy to pay debt. And our phone number is 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School.
We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. You're hanging in there with me, and you're asking great questions. I love that.
We're talking life insurance, and there's a lot to it. We got into a lot in the first half. What are we talking about here, about the policies?
You know, I never thought that you would have so many questions about life insurance, that you would be so engaged. It was really surprising. But the point that the things that we're talking about are not your regular everyday life insurance topics, right? So in the first half, we did talk about life insurance. If you're looking to sell your policy to bail out and get some cash. But along those lines, I want to point out that there are many agents now offering to get you out of debt by having you buy a whole life. Remember, we talked about whole life are the ones that build cash value, some form of whole life policy in order to build the cash value to help you get out of debt faster. Now,
okay.
You probably know what I'm going to say already, but I will tell you that I'm sure there are cases where that makes sense for people. Particularly if they've already maxed out every other opportunity, okay? They've already maxed out their 401k and their IRAs and their savings, and they've got no place else they can put money, or they really need to build money on a tax-free basis to balance out their portfolio, and they have a need. Boy, I could say that about six times. And they have a need for life insurance, okay?
Okay.
In my book, now this is just my opinion, no need for life insurance, not the best investment. Somebody will argue with me, right? I can say that I have people in life insurance who use it as an investment.
Okay.
But that the part of the reason is because they need that, or they want that tax-free death benefit for estate planning purposes. That in itself is a need. Okay. So there are legitimate reasons to buy a life insurance policy. One, that have to do with debt, okay?
Okay.
One is protecting your family from debt. You own, you know, you have outstanding debts like a mortgage, a car loan, personal loans, and you pass away, your family may be responsible for those debts, and a life insurance policy means they have the money to pay those.
Okay.
Before you decide that, ask an attorney or an agent to show you in writing which debts your family is responsible for, because credit card debt isn't one of them. Okay.
Oh, wait, it is one of them?
No, credit card debt,
oh, not one
gone.
Of them. Okay,
unsecured,
yeah, that's
debt gone. Okay. So don't let some agent talk to you about your massive debt that you have to pay off, and therefore you need an enormous policy if most of it is credit card debt, or if you're single. Okay. If you're covering co-signed debts or joint signed debts, right? If you have co-sign loans like student loans, business loans, mortgages, then your co-signer or your spouse might be responsible for paying for them. Again, you can check that. But having life insurance has a benefit. I'm not anti-life insurance. I never have been. I started in the business at John Hancock a bazillion years ago with life insurance and understanding the benefits of it. It can, I'll tell you, there's almost no better feeling that you can do for somebody who is grieving than to be able to, if you don't know them well, right, you're not their family, you're not their loved one, than to be able to show up and say, here's the money tax-free to relieve you of the financial burden, okay? That's really worthwhile. Okay, estate planning and final expenses, right along those lines. That's what you want to be able to do with a life insurance policy. You want to make sure that your bereaved spouse is not worrying about how they're going to pay the funeral expenses or the mortgage next month, right? And so that's what life insurance is for. And last but not least, I would say business debt protection. Those are all reasons you'd buy life insurance when you're trying to use it to ward off debt in some way. Those are legitimate reasons that life insurance policy helps with debt. Okay. Whew. Let's talk about what I don't like about it. What
Let me
I don't
ask a question
like.
Right here real quick.
Sure.
Do people overbuy life insurance, not the overbuy the amount?
It's another really good question. So there are times when it makes sense to buy up a little bit. Life insurance is what we call banded, right? So you will get a better rate on $250,000 than you will get on $242,386.
Okay.
All right. So there are times that it makes sense to to buy up. If a life insurance salesperson is trying, or an agent or broker is trying to sell you more insurance than you think you need or than you feel is right. And again, this might just be to leave it to charity, right? You don't have to have proof of debt to buy a big policy. You might just want some tax-free income or some tax-free, benefit at the end. But if you feel like you're getting pushed into, but you should buy more because of whatever, that's a time when you step back and say, I'm not so comfortable with that. Let me see if I want to buy that much insurance, if I can afford to buy that much. Okay. One of the things that salespeople do in order to get you to buy more life insurance is what I said. They overstate your debt, right? They say, here, you have all this debt. Let me give you some guilt about that. You don't really want your family to have to deal with that. Here's why you need this policy. Okay. These things are what I say are unethical, unscrupulous, morally lousy. They give the business of being in the insurance or the investment name. And there are plenty of people who deserve a good name in the industry. Mm-hmm. Again, if your dependents have co-signed debt, it could make sense for you to buy this life insurance. But if you're single and most of your debt would be discharged upon death, what do you care, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the unscrupulous part that bothers me. The sales pitch is this. You're paying a lot of debt and you're paying your lenders, so why not bank on yourself and put your money into this life insurance policy, because it's going to build cash value. And in a certain period of time, this cash value is going to be valuable enough that you can pull it out and pay off your debt. Doesn't that sound remarkably to you like the line from debt settlement companies that I complain about?
Anything that sounds too good to be true.
The difference is with debt settlement, they tell you to stop making your payments and you trash your credit. Mm-hmm. With this, they're telling you go ahead and keep making your payments and buy this life insurance. Now, I have so many reasons that I think you could do this in a better way. We won't have time for them all. But the least of which is not, if you can afford that larger life insurance premium, because it will take a lot of money to build cash value, less when you're really young, right? You're 20 years old. This might make sense for you in some way, but you should compare the numbers, right? But if you're 50, you're going to pay a lot for the death benefit and very little for the cash value. And it's going to take years, in any case, for this cash value to grow. In the meantime, you're still paying your creditors these lousy interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And when you borrow this money out, there is an interest rate on it. So even if you pay yourself back, you're paying interest. And if you don't pay yourself back, you will eat up that death benefit in loan plus interest. Now, here's the big kicker. When you buy one of these policies and you wait until it grows to a large cash value, and you borrow that large cash value, guess what you get with large cash value that you've borrowed? Large interest, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to pay interest over years. When that interest plus the loan grows to a certain level, if you have stopped paying your life insurance premiums, which is what a lot of people do at that stage, that policy will implode. In other words, you'll get a letter from the company that says, sorry, you've maxed out your loan and interest. Either pay it back or start paying some sort of higher premiums, or your policy will lapse. You will no longer have this death benefit. That's not the real problem. The real problem is when that policy lapses, all of that money that you took out that is in excess of what you paid in
becomes
taxable.
Okay.
Where is the agent that sold you this 25 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago at this stage? Okay. It takes a long time to build that cash value. Now, I've had people say to me, oh, no, it has cash value right away. Really? Where did that come from? It came from someplace else that you could transfer it in, another life policy that you could transfer it in from, which you could have used for this already. So what I would prefer people look for is a better solution. Is it ours? Yeah, we're one of them for sure. But there are so many other better solutions than this in many cases, not in all cases, okay? So on a case-by-case basis, if you're looking at this for yourself, you want to be thinking, you really want to be looking at the details. Is it good for me? Am I young? Do I have a high enough income for many years that I can afford this extra price? for right. a premium? And do I have a need for the life insurance? Then, yeah, there might be a reason to do it. But if you think about it, if you think about the fact that every premium you pay, part of it has to go to death benefit, and the death benefit in turn builds the cash value, right? Mm-hmm. Then obviously, if you could just pay that money towards, say, a high yield savings account, you would build that cash value more quickly. If you did something like our plan in combination with that, where you just paid off your debt, because we pay off the debt so quickly, we reduce those interest rates down in most cases to less than 3%. Mm-hmm. That's less than you'd pay on your own policy loan,
yeah.
right? So you could just do that. And if you have life insurance, you could pick up some term or pick up the whole life if that's what you want. But you don't necessarily need to do it with the idea that you'll wait all these years to get the money to pay off your debt. We could have it paid mm-hmm. off by the time that ever happens. You have
so,
a question?
I did have a question.
I can see it, yeah.
Are the companies, like, if you're taking a loan against your life insurance, is it kind of like credit card companies where they can charge whatever interest they want? Or are there any regulations on, like, you get charged 5% and that's it?
There are regulations. It's in your contract.
Okay.
And it will say either this, it comes with this 4.25% rate, or it comes with Prime Plus or LIBOR Plus, or there will be something in every contract that tells you what your interest rate will be. You can check with your insurance provider about that. And that's a great question. You should know going in what, if you are going to borrow against that policy, maybe even before you buy it, what's that going to look
yeah.
like for you when you go to borrow it? But again, I'm not anti-insurance. I like the idea of building cash value in policies when it makes sense
mm-hmm.
as part of a portfolio. But in my opinion, and in probably most economists that you would talk to or good financial advisors, we would tell you that a good, strong financial plan involves a separate plan for debt than it does for your life insurance. Can they be muddled together sometimes? Sure. But in general, I'd say know what you're getting into in either case, whether you're selling your life insurance because you're trying to get cash back or you're buying a policy because you're trying to pay off debt. Think about that twice
okay.
in both cases.
This is definitely, I think, a topic where people could use some assistance. So what is your phone number if they have questions?
Thank you, Jess. Yes, it's 413-773-3333.
And we haven't mentioned in a little while, but I want to bring up again, too, if you have a question for the Money Doctor and you want to send in a question, we would love to get it. I love springing these questions on the Money Doctor, and she does not know ahead of time and always does so great with them. But you can send those in at jtyler@whmp.com. If we use your question on the air, you get a copy of the book, which is right behind you.
It is Retire Debt and Retire Well.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.